Right, 5 days till election day. So much happening. It gets really exciting in the days leading up to the election. Sort of like getting ready for the big game on Sunday. And yeah, there's going to be winners and losers. And sometimes there's even a tie in the sense that you can have a split decision in a political midterm election year, which everyone seems to be calling. I now, for one, am just kind of polled out. Not sure how much is accurate anyway. I think polls leading up throughout the whole year were meant to deflate conservative Republican chances. These Project Veritas tapes, and we have one that we're going to air tonight. It's going to blow you away, and it's kind of like the one last night. Let me play a little bit of this. This is, you know, there's two supposed stars in the Democratic Party to emerge this election year, and one is Bozo Beto O'Rourke. There's a tape on him, I think, that's coming out pretty soon. Just I'm hearing rumors, and it's not going to be very good for him. And Andrew Gillum, who wants to raise business taxes 40% in Florida. Let me just play a little bit of a Gillum staffer talking about really how crazy left that Gillum happens to be. But, of course, like in the tapes with Bredesen in Tennessee and Claire McCaskill in Missouri and Kristen Sinema in Arizona. By the way, Martha McSally took a lead there. Finally, I think a message has gotten through how absolutely nuts and crazy Kristen Sinema is. And Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. Well, in this particular case, you're hearing Gillum staffers say that he's part of, you know, the left-wing crazy. He calls Florida a cracker state. Listen to this.
So then none of the programs that you know, people are hoping for would happen?
Basically.
Do voters know that?
I know.
Voters know that?
That's not for them to know.
Huh?
That's not for them to know. Remember our saying? Modern day fairy tales start with once I am elected.
So you have the extreme right wingers, those are the Trump and the crazy Republicans. The progressives are the crazy Democrat. You're hipsters, you're hippies.
Are you not a progressive? Isn't Gillum a progressive?
Gillum is a progressive.
So Gillum is part of the crazy crazies?
He's part of the crazy.
But the rules in Florida up.
But tell me about it, man.
All right, this is a bad state.
Okay.
The cracker state.
Okay.
Okay, ask anybody outside of here. You go Port St. Lucie, Orlando. Man, them crackers ain't gonna let us do that. No, you crazy?
Yeah, this is an effed up state, Florida. It's a cracker state. You whip them up, you're the poor, the middle income. You have to whip them into a frenzy in order for them to vote, they added. None of the programs that people are hoping for would happen, but that's not for the voters to know. You notice there's one theme. That is the theme. Democrats cannot be who they really are. They cannot give out their real agenda. They're all acting as somebody that they are not. They're all showing a willingness to just outright lie to get elected. Phil Bredesen and his campaign in Tennessee, Claire McCaskill's campaign in Missouri, Heidi Heitkamp's campaign in North Dakota, and the woman that thinks her fellow Arizonans are crazy and Arizona's the meth lab of democracy and it's okay for Americans to fight and join with the Taliban, our enemies, during a war and fight against us. She thinks that's fine. Inviting the radical blind Sheikh's attorney to go out and speak at Arizona State University. This is not a coincidence. This is what the Democratic Party does. They demonize Republicans. They lie, smear, slander, besmirch. And then they hide what their real agenda is. Although there's not really any agenda that any Democrat is really running on. There's no specifics. There's no programs. There's nothing designed that the if you're a voter, can you name one specific thing that the Democrats are pledging as a party that they're going to do to help the men and women in this country? You can't. But that's by design. You know, the Center for American Progress has actually telling Democrats, don't talk about immigration. It's not a good issue for us. We're not going to win on that. Just don't say, just change the subject is what they're telling them. Same with Maxine Waters. Stop saying it. Impeach 45. Anyway, as a follow-up to this Project Veritas tape, now going viral all over Florida, just like the tapes in Arizona, North Dakota, Missouri. I don't know why some say Missouri, and also Tennessee. Anyway, that was his campaign staffer, Omar Smith, that was caught on the videotape using the racial slurs, saying this is an effed up state, a cracker state. Anyway, claims to have known Mayor Gillum ever since their days at Florida A&M University, despite the long-term friendship. Well, now he's been fired today. Interesting. Andrew Gillum's campaign has cut ties with a campaign vendor volunteer, Omar Smith, caught by the undercover group Project Veritas, as if the racial slurs and vulgar imagery weren't bad enough. Smith also confessed that if Gillum is elected, quote, none of the programs that people are hoping for would happen from him. This is your Democratic Party. This is what's at stake in 5 days. Anecdotally, I'm not paying a lot of attention to this. There is some sort of, well, you can glean some information, anecdotal evidence. Florida voters cast at least 3.5 million pre-election day ballots as of yesterday. Republicans still lead Democrats in the ballot returns, 42-40, so it's very, very close. 26% of the state's active registered voters have turned out already. The three counties with the biggest turnout so far are all GOP-dominated. Sumter County, Lee County, and Collier County, Southwest Florida. President Trump had a big rally for Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis last night, so we're going to watch that very closely. And it's funny to watch some of the races. You know, we have Andrew Cuomo in New York running for a third term. Haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention to it because New York, you got 9 million people in New York alone. And it's like a, 70% Democrat to Republican ratio to 30. I mean, it's just not something that is really difficult. But anyway, Molinaro does want to cut your property taxes 30%, which in the county I live in, it's the second highest property tax county in the country, which wouldn't be bad. And on top of the 10% state income tax we have, interesting anecdotal information, too, but I don't know what it's going to mean. 1 week before Election Day, the Connecticut governor's race apparently is too close to call there, too. That's narrowed as Democrat Ned Lamont's lead has shrunk dramatically. He's up 4 points, 47-43 among likely voters, but it's within the margin of error of plus or minus four. So there's something going on even in these liberal states. Out there, Gavin Newsom is not doing as well as people thought he'd be doing out in California. Just something to keep our eyes on. One of the other big races that we're watching is in Montana. That Senate race took a dramatic turn yesterday when the Libertarian candidate decided to get out of the race and endorse the Republican opponent after an illegal campaign mailer tried to siphon votes from the GOP candidate and paved the way for the Democrat Tester. That's John Tester in that market. John Tester for Montana is basically Chuck Schumer, except with a different name. Republican Matt Rosendale is in a dead heat now with Tester. Polls now showing the GOP candidate. It's a 3-point race, but Fox News deems the race, leaning pretty much now in the middle. It's a toss-up. So that's another, that could be a big shock on election night. If you're in Montana, this election is now real. And for the people of Indiana, I hope you're not paying attention in that particular case to the Libertarian candidate because he's only siphoning away candidates from Braun, who I think otherwise would beat Joe Donnelly fairly easily without the third-party candidate in there. Anyway, the move comes an anonymous campaign mailer in Montana from an unknown group, violation of state federal election laws, went out to people in a bid to garner support for the Libertarian candidate because they know, like what I've been saying about Indiana, it's undermining, in this case, Rosendale's election chances. And Mike Rosendale wants to use patrols to spy on our private lives, the mailer said. Rick Breckenridge is a true conservative and opposes government intrusion into Montana's private lives. Now, it remains unclear who's responsible for the mailer, but the tactics resembles the efforts by Democratic groups that supported Tester's 2012 bid, where the mailer was sent out to promote another Libertarian candidate, and Tester only won that race by 4 percentage points, thanks to the Libertarian who got 6 percentage points in the vote in Montana last time. So this is really an opportunity for the people of Montana, and this could be a massive pickup that really, because of the Libertarian, wasn't as close as it otherwise would be. So we're going to watch that very closely. Gillum back to Florida again, who's running for governor, and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum may have broken state laws again. This is more corruption issues coming up for him, on top of taking FBI-given tickets to Hamilton, an FBI investigator, basically a bribe, and then getting apparently the deal that they wanted. I mean, I don't even think this guy's going to be able to finish out his term if he did win. Pretty interesting to watch this come to fruition. But anyway, this revelation is the latest for Gillum. After days, it emerged that he had accepted pricey tickets to Hamilton from an undercover FBI agent named Mike Miller, posing as a developer in the summer of 2016, and Gillum maintained he got the tickets from his brother. Well, we know that's not true, and assumed his brother had paid for them. Oh, okay, let's blame my brother for that. Anyway, the document releases from the GOP-connected lawyer, Chris Kises, represents Gillum backer and former campaign treasurer Adam Corey, followed a subpoena by the Florida Commission on Ethics, which along with the FBI has investigated potential corruption at the highest levels of the Tallahassee city government. Sounds like Albany, New York. And Gillum's not formally been identified as a target in the probe, and he's not been accused of wrongdoing, but I think that's pretty interesting that he took tickets from an undercover FBI guy. I don't think I'd want that in my life. And, of course, a person that he thought was looking for a contract with the city. By the way, we are following the caravan issue, which nobody in the media apparently wants anybody to talk about. Not allowed to talk about. It's not fair. We're going to get to all of these races. James O'Keefe is going to break this this new tape that he has on Andrew Gillum. He's got another tape we expect coming out of Texas tonight. We'll tell you more about that as the program unfolds. The president will be speaking in the next hour. We'll check in with him and what he has to say. We'll also be checking in with Governor Rick Scott. We got Monica Crowley and also Tammy Bruce are going to stop by today. So we got a busy day. 5 days out of Election Day, the best election coverage available on your radio dial.
$10,000. Hannity listeners, this is for you. The United States Concealed Carry Association wants to send you on the ultimate gun getaway. That's right. You could win $10,000 to take the patriotic trip you've always dreamed of. And all you have to do is text CARRY to 87222 for your 100% free chance to win. You could go on a wild African safari, attend an elite firearms training academy, or even shoot exotic rifles at a VIP tactical shooting experience. With 10 grand in your pocket, the sky's the limit. But you only have until the 23rd to enter, so you must hurry. Just text CARRY to the number 87222 right now for our official rules and to instantly lock in your free chance to win your ultimate gun getaway. Imagine what you could do and where you could go with 10 grand. And entering only takes a few seconds. So what are you waiting for? Text CARRY to the number 87222. That's the word CARRY, C-A-R-R-Y, to 87222. Don't miss this.
And as we roll along, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Nancy Pelosi, after we win the House, who does this sound like? Sounds like Hillary. Then we're going to tone down the rhetoric. In the meantime, it's all, you know, we're going to say anything we need to say so that we can win and it doesn't matter. A new poll came out in finally, I don't know what's taking the people of Arizona so long. You guys are getting me a little nervous out in Phoenix and elsewhere in the state, because now finally McSally is taking a commanding 7-point lead in that race over the real radical Sinema. This is an ABC 15 Arizona poll and steadily leading. I can't see how a person like Kristen Sinema, who thinks you're all crazy in Arizona and you're the meth lab of democracy in Arizona and it's okay to fight with the Taliban after 9/11. That's fine, according to her. and all her radical positions, and she's caught on tape admitting she's going to be a radical left-wing senator, but she won't tell you the people of Arizona. I think Martha McSally, the war hero, 28 years served, and six tours of duty, maybe, just maybe, it's time to give her the support she needs at this point. I saw Oprah Winfrey is down in Georgia. There's a big fight in the Georgia race for governor, which includes Stacey Abrams, who's being supported by Oprah Winfrey. And I guess a bunch of big-name Democrats are headed down there. Winfrey's there today. Barack Obama's going down there. And other Democrats are pouring a ton of money in against Kemp. And so we'll be watching that race, I guess, closely. But it's pretty much been a neck and neck, which is why Kemp has taken no chances. And Vice President Mike Pence has been going down there. And President Trump, who already endorsed Kemp, has been tweeting out in support of him. So let's see what happens there. There's one poll that has Donnelly. This is where the libertarian factor comes in, just like in Montana. Now that the libertarian has dropped out and supported the Republican, John Tester can be beaten and beaten probably fairly easily. And if everybody in Indiana gets the message that don't vote for the libertarian, Joe Donnelly will be defeated there, because the Montana libertarian Senate candidate bowed out. And he's now supporting the Republican Rosendale over Tester. And Donnelly, by the way, made some outrageous remarks that I told you about yesterday. Minorities, but they do an amazing job. They're this, but they do an amazing job. Really? All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 5 days until Election Day. Let's see. Indiana Senator Donnelly says he's willing to look at legislation to end birthright citizenship. Oh, that's interesting. That sounded like Claire McCaskill all of a sudden, 5-6 days before the election. Now, you know, Trump isn't as really, I actually might find an area of agreement. He gets elected. He's got 6 more years. He's not voting at all with Donald Trump like he hasn't been. He's been a reliable Chuck Schumer Democrat through and through. Claire McCaskill, a reliable Chuck Schumer Democrat through and through. Pretty interesting. By the way, poll of likely voters show Republicans up in Tennessee and North Dakota. Those are two polls out today. By the way, Mark Meadows says the FBI may have secretly recorded the Trump campaign. When Mark Meadows says that usually means it's true, and it's just a matter of time until we find out. George Papadopoulos, if you haven't been watching on Twitter, I think it would be a bad idea. He's thinking about, I guess, withdrawing his plea deal, but I think George Papadopoulos, in his case, considering it's 2 weeks in jail, I wouldn't risk a year or up to 5 years in jail in that particular case. But anyway, Meadows called the Department of Justice to release any tapes that might exist to the American public. Over several interviews, we've learned information suggesting the FBI secretly transcribed, even taped, George Papadopoulos in 2016, wrote Meadows. He's, of course, the head of the House Freedom Caucus, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, member of the Congressional Task Force investigating the FBI's handling of the Trump-Russia probe. If these tapes exist, the DOJ must make them available. By the way, on the deep state issue, all they're waiting for, hoping for, praying for is Nancy Pelosi to come in to the rescue. If you want to know, there's an estimate, border surge, the highest since 2011, and the net cost to taxpayers, according to the Washington Examiner, for every illegal immigrant who sneaks into the United States has reached nearly $70,000, or about 7 times the cost of deporting them, and about $70 billion total, according to a new report. And according to the federal census data, the surge of legal and illegal immigrants across the southern border of Mexico has reached a new high since 2011 and matched the historic high of 1.75 million. By the way, total immigration to U.S., it ties the all-time record. Anyway, the migrant caravan has stopped in South Mexico, and they're asking for buses, which the government of Mexico is saying they are not going to be providing. They already advanced 250 miles, and they won't have to walk anymore, at least for a while. Red Cross personnel on Wednesday, you know, were on the ground helping people that had swollen feet. Obviously, it's a long trek. And the government of Mexico is offering temporary work visas for southern Mexico if they want to stay there and try and build a better life there. There's a new migrant caravan departing El Salvador. So that's a pretty interesting sidebar in all of this. We have, you know, the controversy continues with Don Lemon over at CNN, fake news. And I guess I'm not really, I guess it's okay to say the things that he said over at CNN, because he addressed those who was criticizing his comments the night before, saying cold, hard facts. The evidence is overwhelming, he said. In other words, doubling down on his claim that right-wing white males are responsible for more terrorist attacks in America. Here's the tape of Don Lemon.
So we have to stop demonizing people and
We have to stop demonizing people. All right, now start from the beginning. Go ahead.
So we have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right, to the right. And we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
Now, the interesting thing is, so he tries to stand by those remarks, pointing to studies that showed the majority of domestic terror attacks in the U.S. in the last two decades have been perpetrated by far-right violent extremists, most of whom are white. The first study he cited was a 2017 report from the Office of Government Accountability purporting to show that the majority of domestic terrorism between 2001 and 16 were right-wing extremists. Then he cited a 2017 report from the Nations Institute's investigative fund, which found that there were twice as many terror incidents by right-wing extremists. Actually, neither one of those studies show that the majority of domestic terrorism attacks between 2001 and 16 were committed by right-wing extremists. Even the Huffington Post provided links to both of Lemon's studies, so I decided to look at them. The GAO study doesn't start at the beginning of 2001. It starts the day after 9/11, 2001. Let's just forget the one big day. Let's forget that one. And that's when nearly 3,000 Americans were killed. The Nation study that he cited only covers the last decade. So that leaves out the 9/11 attacks. But that's not the only problem with his studies, because studies measure the terrorist threat not by how many people were killed by any one attack, how many individual attacks took place, no matter how deadly the attacks were. For instance, if you go to the Orlando massacre, the Islamic radical Omar Mateen, 49 people were killed. Well, that counts as a single terrorist attack in the GOA study. Meanwhile, the overwhelming majority of, quote, right-wing attacks. Listen, there are crazy people all over the political spectrum. Let's be honest about it. But anyway, selective news editing by fake news CNN. And here's an interesting sidebar to that. You know, the president says that, you know, fake news and CNN doesn't listen when people chant that CNN sucks. I think over time, if I was hearing every night, well, Fox sucks, I might at least look at what the criticisms are. But apparently, they don't have any desire to do so. But there is a new Politico morning consult poll. Considering the president's been going back and forth with the press about fake news and fake news, he says, he's very specific, being the enemy of the people. And that drives everybody in the media absolutely nuts. You're advocating violence. Not advocating violence. It's that they're, I think it's another way of saying, my interpretation of it at least, is you are doing the public a great disservice with the powerful platforms you have. Now, they have a right to do it any way they want. The only people looking to shut down voices in America, the only people that want to do that are people on the left that want to shut down our voices. because people on the left don't like what conservatives are having to say. I even said last night on television, I don't support a boycott or the firing of Don Lemon. I don't support his comments either. But if they consider themselves a fact-first network, well, they're not. And there's a reason. Anyway, so 64% in this poll say that the media has done more to divide the country than unite it, compared with 56% of those that responded similarly when discussing Trump. Now, nobody is going to deny that this president is a disruptor. This president can be combative. This president is taking on a swamp and a sewer in D.C. He's not being particularly polite about it, nor should he if he wants to be effective. And I think one of the reasons he is so effective is because when he fights to get better trade deals and gets NATO to pay their fair share, or he's fighting for lower taxes, or he's fighting for less bureaucracy, or he's battling against Kim Jong-un, and reminds me a little bit of Reagan saying the evil empire. And they said the same thing about Reagan, that Reagan was going to start World War III. He ended up bringing an end to the Cold War without firing a shot. We've got hostages home and we got remains delivered and we have no more rockets being fired over Japan. And the president hasn't given up one thing except said, good. Now, if you want to get a real agreement on ending nuclear proliferation in the Korean Peninsula, we can do that next. But there's no doubt, and if you had any doubt, you see the way the media went out and tried to blame Donald Trump for the shooting that happened in the synagogue over the weekend, this horrible terrorist attack, because that's what that was, the worst anti-Semitic attack on American soil ever. 11 murdered, 6 injured. And what happened there? And they say, well, that Donald Trump caused that. Well, not true. Fake news. Because the guy clearly hated Trump in large part because of his friendship and his support for the state of Israel. Just the opposite of what they're saying.
His terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right. And we have to start doing something about them.
Yeah, if you guys stop saying mean things about me, I'll stop inciting angry lunatics to kill you. Deal?
Whether the president knew what he was saying, the alleged gunman certainly heard something that resonated.
What Trump is doing is stoking and inciting, for the purposes of political power, the worst amongst us to take action in his name. Anybody who sits there and says that there is not causality between these events and the incitements is as dishonest as they are blind.
I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist to draw the lines between these people and the rhetoric that is being parroted by the President of the United States right now.
The racists and the anti-Semites think that he's perfectly tolerant of racial violence and anti-Semitic violence.
Yeah, and it all goes in one direction. You know, look, it's always been bad. During these election times, I mean, if you look at, let's see, want to talk about violence on the left? We have two men, you know, heave a boulder through a window into the home office of House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. That's out in Bakersfield, California. He had shots fired at the Republican Party headquarters in Florida. You have activist actor James Cromwell promising there will be blood in the streets if Democrats don't take back our democracy in this election. We have a crazed Sanders supporter wanted to spread, this lead the wealth as his agenda. Apparently shot at, tried to kill Steve Scalise at this congressional baseball practice. I didn't, and I don't blame Bernie Sanders. You know, you look at all the other instances, Democratic Party now moves even further leftward. There are no moderates. There wasn't a lot of outrage at Madonna suggesting she thinks an awful lot about blowing up the White House. I mean, I guess they're frustrated because they love the 8 years of Obama that were horrible to the forgotten men and women in this country. I guess they don't like tax cuts. I guess they want bigger regulation for the country. They don't want energy independence for the country. They like activist justices that will support foreign law and not abide by our constitutional law. You know, so I guess here comes Donald Trump, and out come the Kathy Griffins of the world holding up severed heads of the President of the United States, and then everything in between. Howard Dean saying the Pittsburgh shootings have energized Democrats. I'm pretty optimistic. Well, something to be optimistic about. By the way,
Democrats are trying to basically run against a president who's got a very powerful message of hate, basically, which can be effective at times like this when the nation has been turned upside down by this president. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic, actually, because in these kinds of elections are usually determined at the last 3 days, which pollsters can't pick up. I do think there is a tendency towards voting Democrat. And I think the Democrats are a lot more energized, particularly, I hate to say this, after the shootings in Pittsburgh, which where Trump really showed his true colors and then went right back to demonizing Jews shortly after the shooting.
He never did any such thing. He talked about anybody that takes on Israel or the Jewish people as an enemy is our enemy that we'll destroy. But he just makes it up. You got celebrities now begging people to vote. Trump administration keeping children in cages. Another group of Hollywood celebrities. By the way, this is like the best part. If you do shock the world in 5 days, and let's say the Senate, the Republicans pick up even more seats than are anticipated. That happens, and they hold the House. It will be priceless. It's worth the price of admission. You will see a meltdown like you've never seen before. I promise you. It'll be from the media. Now, listen, I've handled two Obamas and two terms of Clinton. Been around this game a long time. Had wins, I've had losses. You know, if you lose, you just got to fight harder. That's the way I look at it. But it would be unbelievable. That would be the price of admission, just to watch them lose it. And they'll lose it. They're losing it now. And I think it's just a sign that they're really nervous. All right, glad you're with us. Hour two. We expect in about, 11 minutes, that's the scheduled time, the president is going to speak about the caravan, the migrants, the 15,000 troops now that he has sent down to the border. And, of course, also working with General Mattis to build barriers, which are being installed even as we speak. We have one Mediaite report today that Heather Nauert, who used to work with us at Fox, might in fact be, and she's the fourth highest person now at the State Department, has reportedly been offered the job of U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Very smart. Be a great choice in my humble opinion. And who would replace Nikki Haley? And somebody that knows foreign policy. She's traveled all over the world with Mike Pompeo, Rex Tillerson before that. So we'll watch that fairly interesting development. We just got a Daily Caller piece that broke. More news on Andrew Gillum down in Florida, if you people are paying attention. And I think Andrew Gillum has a big problem on his hands after what came out with Project Veritas yesterday. But anyway, the headline is Andrew Gillum attended an event hosted by an anti-Semitic organization following a mass attack on Jewish Americans. And the article from Daily Caller goes on to say that he had attended a campaign event hosted by Engage. I've never heard of it. An American Muslim organization that lobbies against pro-Israel legislation the day before the campaign event. That's when the mass shooting took place in the Pittsburgh synagogue. The co-chair of Engage, they write, has an extensive history of defending radical Islamic terrorists. And he spoke at the event the day after the shooting took place at the synagogue. And Gillum and his running mate, Chris King, spoke at, quote, Muslims for Gillum. And that was in Orlando, Florida. The event was co-hosted by Engage, the lobbying group, only a day earlier. Obviously, what had happened at the Tree of Life happened. And they've been a vocal supporter of Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee. And anyway, so the co-chair of Engage has apparently, they write, an extensive history of defending individuals that the United States government has tied to the Islamic terrorism. One guy's name is Waleed, was the defense attorney, In the Sabir case, who was sentenced to 25 years in prison for conspiring with al-Qaeda by providing material support and medical care to injured militants, Hafiz Khan, who was found guilty of conspiracy, providing material support to terrorists and sending $50,000 to the Taliban in order to kill American troops overseas, apparently has not been a good day. The Daily Caller reporter is right for Andrew Gillum, who wants to be the next governor of Florida. And, you know, this always happens in the lead up to these elections. I mean, all this news and information comes out constantly, and it's just almost hard for people to hang on to and grasp. I mean, look, you got 5 days till Election Day. That's what you need to know. You know, it's you got a choice. Nancy Pelosi is Speaker. You got a choice. Chuck Schumer is Senate Majority Leader. All of these races matter. We have three possible outcomes, and that is the Republicans shock the world and pick up seats in the Senate and hold on to the House. That would be the most ideal. It would be worth the price of admission just watching the media lose it on election night like they did in 2016. You know, one of the things I've learned, having done this for 30 years, you don't win everything you want to win. There's a certain ebb and flow and cycle to politics. 45 Republicans in the House retiring certainly is not helpful. The headwinds that would face anybody, I mean, look at the dramatic losses in 1994 that Bill Clinton suffered when Newt Gingrich brought the Republicans to power for the first time in 40 years. I mean, that was a drastic night and a dramatic shift. In many ways, I would argue, putting aside Clinton's personal peccadilloes and atrocious behavior, you know, it did change Clinton. Clinton did move towards Newt Gingrich. They had a debate once. They wanted to balance the budget and 7 years using Congressional Budget Office numbers, and they wanted to hold the rate of Medicare spending to a 7% increase a year rather than the projected 10, 11, and 12%. Democrats were crying, it's a cut, it's a cut, it's a cut. But when you increase spending 7%, only Washington would call that a cut. You're just reducing the rate of increase to a more sustainable level so you don't go bankrupt. And then, of course, Barack Obama, he had the same thing happen to him in 2010, which is a wipeout. That was the Tea Party year. 2014 was supposed to be a wipeout for Republicans. It ended up being anything but. But you got a lot of tight races. Florida, we've got Rick Scott, Ron DeSantis. It looks like a neck-and-neck battle, one-point race either way. And so I don't know what's going to happen there. I think this Project Veritas video is now just beginning to hit the people of Florida and the horrible things that this campaign staffer had been saying. I mean, it's pretty radical. I played it in the last hour. We're going to check in with James O'Keefe later in the program today. And, you know, you have in the case of, Gillum was campaign staffer caught, you know, talking about political tricks using racist language. You know, the people of Florida are crackers, et cetera, and telling you, oh, we got to whip people up and whip people into a frenzy. The poor, the middle class, you got to whip them up into a frenzy to get them out to vote. And, of course, also admitting, like the other Project Veritas tapes, like Bredesen in Tennessee, McCaskill, Missouri, Sinema, Arizona, Heitkamp in North Dakota, they're all admitting the same thing, that they can't say who they really are. You know, of course, then when you ask them questions, now this one guy got fired, was a friend of Andrew Gillum. All right, it looks like, let me tell you what it looks like to me. It looks like the president's going to be fairly on time. So why don't we do this? We're going to take a quick earlier break, get our station sponsors in, then we'll come back and we'll have the president's remarks on immigration and the 15,000 troops he's sending down to the southern border and the migrant caravan and much more. Later on, we will check in with James O'Keefe. We have Monica Crowley and Tammy Bruce are going to join us. We'll get their take on which way this election is going and heading, and we'll look at the latest poll numbers and much more. Rick Scott, also of Florida, will join us, the governor, soon to be hopefully senator. Quick break, right back. We'll continue. All right, the president just stepping up to the podium in the White House addressing illegal immigration and border security.
Consider this.
I'd like to provide an update to the American people regarding the crisis on our southern border, and crisis it is. Illegal immigration affects the lives of all Americans. Illegal immigration hurts American workers, burdens American taxpayers, and undermines public safety, and places enormous strain on our local schools, hospitals, and communities in general, taking precious resources away from the poorest Americans who need them most. Illegal immigration costs our country billions and billions of dollars each year. America is a welcoming country, and under my leadership, it's a welcoming country. We lead the world in humanitarian protection and assistance by far. It's nobody even close. We have the largest and most expansive immigration programs anywhere on the planet. We've issued 40 million green cards since 1970, which means the permanent residency and a path to citizenship for many, many people. But we will not allow our generosity to be abused by those who would break our laws, defy our rules, violate our borders, break into our country illegally. We won't allow it. Mass uncontrolled immigration is especially unfair to the many wonderful law-abiding immigrants already living here who followed the rules and waited their turn. Some have been waiting for many years. Some have been waiting for a long time. They've done everything perfectly. And they're going to come in. At some point, they're going to come in. Many cases, very soon. We need them to come in because we have companies coming into our country. They need workers. But they have to come in on a merit basis, and they will come in on a merit basis. The communities are often left to bear the cost and the influx of people that come in illegally. We can't allow that. There's a limit to how many people a nation can responsibly absorb into their societies. Every day, above and beyond our existing lawful admission programs, roughly 1,500 to 2,000 people try crossing our borders illegally. We do a very good job considering the laws are so bad. They're not archaic. They're incompetent. It's not that they're old. They're just bad. And we can't get any Democrat votes to change them. It's only the Republicans that are in unison. They want to change them. They want to make strong borders. Want to get rid of any crime because of the borders, of which there's a lot. And we've done a great job with the laws that we have. We're moving in tremendous numbers of people to get out the MS-13 gangs and other gangs that illegally come into our country. And we're getting them out by the thousands. But this is a perilous situation, and it threatens to become even more hazardous as our economy gets better and better. A lot of the cause of this problem is the fact that we right now have the hottest economy anywhere in the world. It's doing better than any economy in the world. Jobs, unemployment, you look at any number. Right now, we have more workers than any time in the history of our country. We have more people working, which is a tremendous statement. More people working than at any time in the history of our country. And people want to come in, and in some cases, they want to take advantage of that. And that's okay, and we want them to come in, but they have to come in through merit. They have to come in legally. At this very moment, large, well-organized caravans of migrants are marching toward our southern border. Some people call it an invasion. It's like an invasion. They have violently overrun the Mexican border. You saw that 2 days ago. These are tough people in many cases. A lot of young men, strong men, and a lot of men that maybe we don't want in our country. But again, we'll find that out through the legal process. But they've overrun the Mexican police, and they've overrun and hurt badly Mexican soldiers. So this isn't an innocent group of people. There's a large number of people that are tough. They've injured, they've attacked, and the Mexican police and military has actually suffered. And I appreciate what Mexico is trying to do. So let me begin by stating that these illegal caravans will not be allowed into the United States. And they should turn back now, because they're wasting their time. They should apply to come into our country. We want them to come into our country. very much. We need people to help us with all of these companies that are coming in. We've never had anything like this. We have car companies coming in. We have Foxconn so involved with the manufacturing of Apple products coming in Wisconsin. We have a lot of companies coming in, but they have to apply, and they have to be wonderful people that are going to love our country and work hard. And we've already dispatched for the border the United States military, and they will do the job. They're setting up right now, and they're preparing. We hope nothing happens, but if it does, we are totally prepared. Greatest military anywhere in the world, and it's going to be and is now in great shape, no longer depleted like it was when I took over as the President of the United States. The government of Mexico has generously offered asylum, jobs, education, and medical care for people within the caravan. But many members of the caravan have refused these offers, which demonstrate that these migrants are not legitimate asylum seekers. They're not looking for protection, because if they were, they'd be able to get it from Mexico. Mexico has agreed to take them in and encourage them to stay. But they don't want to stay. They want to come into the United States. So this is no longer safety. And asylum is about safety. Asylum is not a program for those living in poverty. There are billions of people in the world living at the poverty level. The United States cannot possibly absorb them all. Asylum is a very special protection intended only for those fleeing government persecution based on race, religion, and other protected status. These caravans and illegal migrants are drawn to our country by Democrat-backed laws and left-wing judicial rulings. We're getting rulings that are so ridiculous, so bad. They're writing the laws. Can't do that. Collectively known as an example, catch and release. It's a disgrace that we have to put up with it. These policies lead to the release of illegal aliens into our communities after they've been apprehended. But we're not releasing anymore. Big change. As of a couple of days ago, we're going to no longer release. We're going to catch. We're not going to release. They're going to stay with us until the deportation hearing or the asylum hearing takes place. So we're not releasing them into the community. We have millions of people that over the years have been released into the community. They never show up for the trials. They never come back. They're never seen again. And those people, they know who they are. And we know a lot of where they are, who they are. And those people will be deported, directly deported. The biggest loophole drawing illegal aliens to our borders is the use of fraudulent or meritless asylum claims to gain entry into our great country. An alien simply crosses the border illegally, finds a Border Patrol agent, and using well-coached language by lawyers and others that stand there and trying to get fees.
For our affiliates all across the Sean Hannity Show Network, we're going to stay with the president's press conference addressing illegal immigration and border security. And some of you I know might be breaking away, but we'll stay with the coverage.
It's to read. They never heard of the phrase before. They don't believe in the phrase. But they're given a little legal statement to read. And they read it. And now all of a sudden they're supposed to qualify, but that's not the reason they're here. This merely asserts the need for asylum and then often released into the United States, and they await a lengthy court process. The court process will take years sometimes for them to attend. Well, we're not releasing them into our country any longer. They'll wait for long periods of time. We're putting up massive cities of tents. The military is helping us incredibly well. I want to thank the Army Corps of Engineers. They've been so efficient, so good, so talented. We have thousands of tents. We have a lot of tents. We have a lot of everything. We're going to hold them right there. We're not letting them into our country. And then they never show up. Almost. It's like a level of 3%. They never show up for the trial. So by the time their trial comes, they're gone. Nobody knows where they are. But we know where a lot of them are, and they're going to be deported. There are now nearly 700,000 aliens inside the United States awaiting adjudication of their claims. Most of these people, we have no idea how they got there, why they got there, and the number is actually going to be a much larger number as we look at all of the data. So if you look at just at a minimal number, it's the size of Vermont or bigger. And the overall number could be 10 million people, could be 12 million people, could be 20 million people. The record keeping from past administrations has not exactly been very good. As human smugglers and traffickers have learned how the game is played and how to game the system, we have witnessed a staggering 1,700 increase in asylum claims since the year 2010. They understand the law better than the lawyers understand the law. You have a lot of professionalism there. You have a lot of professionalism involved with setting up the caravans. You take a look at the way that's happening. Even the countries, you look at Honduras and El Salvador, and you look at what's happening at the different levels and different countries or what's happening on the streets. There's a lot of professionalism taking place, and there seems to be a lot of money passing. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, these big caravans are formed and they start marching up. Got a long way to go. On average, once released, an asylum case takes 3.5 years to complete. Think of it. Somebody walks into our country, reads a statement given by a lawyer, and we have a 3.5 year court case for one person. Whereas other people tell them, out, get out, just get out. Other countries, get out. We have a border, get out. We go through years and years of litigation because of the Democrats and the incompetent, very, very stupid laws that we have. They're the laughingstock all over the world, including the people that are marching up. They understand. But the difference is we're not allowing them in, and we're not releasing, and we're not doing any of the things that were done for so many years that really are terrible for our country. The overwhelming majority of claims are rejected by the courts, but by that time, the alien has usually long since disappeared into our country. So they never get to see the judge, they never get to have a ruling. They don't care because they're in the country and nobody knows where they are. All told, there are approximately 1 million aliens who have received final orders of removal. They've actually got final orders of removal. You don't have to go to a court anymore. The courts have already issued the orders of removal, and we've gotten a lot of them, but who remain at large in our country. So we're moving them out. This endemic abuse of the asylum system makes a mockery of our immigration system, displacing legitimate asylum seekers, and there are legitimate asylum seekers, while rewarding those who abuse or defraud our system, which is almost everybody. Everybody is abusing it and just doing things to our system which were unthinkable, I'm sure, even by the Democrats who were largely responsible for getting it done. These individuals disrespect the foundations of American government by voluntarily choosing to break the law as their first act on American soil. Furthermore, contained within this giant flow of illegal migration to our southwest border is the movement of illicit and deadly narcotics. It's in the southwest. Most of it comes in. Nearly 100% of heroin in the United States enters through the southern border. Think of that, 100% almost of heroin comes in through the southern border, along with roughly 90% of cocaine and the majority of meth and a substantial portion of the ultra-lethal fentanyl killing our youth. The fentanyl is killing our youth. These drugs destroy the lives and kill much more than 70,000 Americans every single year. And the number goes up and up and up because we are so foolish with our laws that we allow this to happen. A death toll equivalent of the size of an entire American city every year. The current influx, if not halted, threatens to overwhelm our immigration system and our communities and poses unacceptable dangers to the entire nation. Have to have our borders. Can't let drugs come in. It's not just people. It's people. It's drugs. It's human traffickers. Human trafficking is now at the highest level in the world that it's ever been. That's because of the internet. Think of it. Human trafficking. You think back 200 years, 500 years. Human trafficking, where they steal children, in many cases women, unfortunately. They steal women. They're human traffickers. The lowest scum on earth. The lowest scum on earth. And it's at a level that it's never been worldwide, never been at a level like this. If these caravans are allowed into our country, only bigger and more emboldened caravans will follow. And you see that's what's happening now. We have one that's coming up, and it's being somewhat dissipated as they march, but then other people are joining it. And then it gets bigger. And now, if you look back at Honduras and if you look at El Salvador, other ones are solving, and they're forming. They're forming. You have new ones that are forming. And we call it caravan number two. Is unbelievably rough, people. Very, very hard for the military to stop it. Our military will have no problem. But very, very hard. Mexico's having a very, very hard time with it. Once they arrive, the Democrat Party's vision is to offer them free health care, free welfare, free education, and even the right to vote. You and the hardworking taxpayers of our country will be asked to pick up the entire tab. That's what's happening. Medical, and in many cases, they've got some big medical problems before they get here. No nation can allow itself to be overwhelmed by uncontrolled masses of people rushing their border. That's what's happening. They are rushing our border. They're coming up. And even before you get to the caravan, just on a daily basis, people coming in. And it's a very bad thing for our country. It's sad in many ways, but it's a very bad thing for our country. And again, costs us billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. And I will therefore take every lawful action at my disposal to address this crisis. And that's what we're doing. The United States military, great people. My administration is finalizing a plan to end the rampant abuse of our asylum system. It's abused to halt the dangerous influx and to establish control over America's sovereign borders. We've got borders. And once that control is set and standardized and made very strong, including the building of the wall, which we've already started. $1.6 billion spent last year, $1.6 billion this year. We have another $1.6 that will be coming, but we want to build it at one time. All it does is turn people in a different direction if you don't. We want to build it at one time. Under this plan, the illegal aliens will no longer get a free pass into our country by lodging meritless claims in seeking asylum. Instead, migrants seeking asylum will have to present themselves lawfully at a port of entry. So they're going to have to lawfully present themselves at a port of entry. Those who choose to break our laws and enter illegally will no longer be able to use meritless claims to gain automatic admission into our country. We will hold them for a long time if necessary. The only long-term solution to the crisis and the only way to ensure the endurance of our nation as a sovereign country is for Congress to overcome open borders obstruction. That's exactly what it is. It's open borders obstruction. No votes. You can come up with the greatest border plan, the greatest immigration plan. You won't get one vote from a Democrat. They have terrible policy. In many cases, they're terrible politicians, but the one thing I give them great credit for, they vote as a block. They stick together. And we will end catch and release. We're not releasing any longer. We also must finish the job that we started by being strong at the border. When we're strong at the border, people will turn away and they won't bother. You will see in a year from now, or in certainly a period of time from now, despite our very good economy, which some of them come for that, and I can't blame them for that. You have to do it legally. But you will see that the numbers of people trying to get in will be greatly reduced. But that can only happen if we're strong at the border. And the southern border is a big problem. And it's a tremendous problem for drugs pouring in and destroying our youth and really destroying the fabric of our country. There's never been a drug problem like we have today. And as I said, much of it comes from the southern border. So in the meantime, I will fulfill my sacred obligation to protect our country and defend the United States of America. And this is a defense of our country. We have no choice. We have no choice. We will defend our borders. We will defend our country. Thank you very much. We're working on a system where they stay together. But well, I will say that by doing that, tremendous numbers, you know, and under the Obama plan, you could separate children. They never did anything about that. Nobody talks about that. But under President Obama, they separated children from the parents. We actually put it so that that didn't happen. But what happens when you do that is you get tremendous numbers of people coming. It's almost like an incentive to, when they hear they're not going to be separated, they come many, many times over. But President Obama separated the children from the parents, and nobody complained. When we continued the exact same law, this country went crazy. So we are going to continue and try to continue what we're doing. But it is a tremendous incentive for people to try. But it's going to be very, very hard for people to come into our country. So we think we'll be able to do that.
How do you plan to?
Firing upon any of these people? Could you see
it? I hope not. I hope not. It's the military. I hope there won't be that. But I will tell you this. Anybody throwing stones, rocks, like they did to Mexico and the Mexican military, Mexican police, where they badly hurt police and soldiers of Mexico, we will consider that a firearm. Because there's not much difference. When you get hit in the face with a rock, which, as you know, it was very violent a few days ago, very, very violent. That break-in, it was a break-in of a country. They broke into Mexico. And you look at what's happening in Guatemala, just to mention Guatemala, along with El Salvador and Honduras. It's disgraceful that those countries aren't able to stop this, because they should be able to stop it before it starts. And the United States pays them a fortune. And we're looking at not doing that anymore, because why should we be doing that when they do nothing for us? You know.
Jeff,
go ahead.
Mr. President, how is this plan going to be legal, considering current law?
Oh, this is totally legal. No, this is legal. We're stopping people at the border. This is an invasion, and nobody's even questioning that.
But in terms of your plans to change asylum, are you going to do this via executive order?
No, you don't have to. You don't have to release. You can hold. The problem is, to hold people, you need massive facilities. The most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Another country says, sorry, you can't come in. With us, we take their name, take their phone number, take their everything, and say, good luck. Only because we don't have the facilities to hold people. But we're building the facilities now. We're building massive numbers of tents, and we will hold them in tents.
But
you don't have to release them. They released them only because they didn't have the facilities to hold. We will be doing an executive order sometime next week, yes.
Executive order with any cash and release and asylum?
It's going to be talking about everything. It'll be quite comprehensive.
Many of
the things we've talked about.
Mr. President, so you're, just to clarify, you are speaking of in the tents, these family units that would arrive
of
the children.
We have other facilities also. But what's happened is we are holding so many facilities, so many people, that our facilities are being overrun. They're being overrun. And we are putting up temporary facilities. Eventually, people won't be coming here anymore when they realize they can't get through.
So
So they will hold the children in those tents with their parents.
We will be holding the family and the children together. Remember this, President Obama separated children from families. And all I did was take the same law, and then I softened the law. But by softening the law, many people come up that would not have come up if there was separation.
When you say that you want, Mr. President, when you say that the critics who think this is a political thing for the midterm?
There's nothing political about a caravan of thousands of people, and now others forming, pouring up into our country. We have no idea who they are. All we know is they're pretty tough people when they can blast through the Mexican military and Mexican police. They're pretty tough people. Even Mexico said, wow, these are tough people. I don't want them in our country. And women don't want them in our country. Women want security. Men don't want them in our country, but the women do not want them. Women want security. You look at what are, the women are looking for. They want to have security. They don't want to have these people in our country. And they're not going to be in our country. It's a very big thing. Yes.
President, the President, the President.
When you talk about finalizing a plan to end asylum, is this a plan that will be included in that executive order?
People are going to have a chance to go for asylum. But if you look at the records, not very many people are allowed to stay once they go to court. But what happens is they'd go into, they were using asylum. First of all, they were told what to say by lawyers and others. Read this statement. You read the statement, and now you're seeking asylum. The whole thing is ridiculous. And we won't put up with it.
President Trump, U.S. law and international law says that people who have valid claims have a right to seek asylum. So why would be?
Well, they're going to go to court. They're going to go to court, as crazy as it sounds. They're going to go. Excuse me. Ready? They're going to go to court. And a judge is going to determine. But usually when they go to court, they're deported. It just seems that most of the people are deported once they go. The problem is they never end up going to court because when they come in, they're told to come back in a year for a court case, and they disappear into the United States, never to be seen again.
But the current laws doesn't say about holding people in detention.
And they're given deportation notices. We will be deporting those people.
But we're talking about a changing law? A changing law?
Rocks, rock throwing, like in Mexico, instead of...
We will consider that... The maximum that we can consider that, because they're throwing rocks viciously and violently. You saw that 3 days ago, really hurting the military. We're not going to put up with that. They want to throw rocks at our military fights back. We're going to consider, and I told them, consider it a rifle. When they throw rocks like they did at the Mexico military and police, I say, consider it a rifle. Jeff?
Yes, separate topic, sir. Did you offer Heather Nauer the job of UN ambassador?
No, she's under very serious consideration. She's excellent. She's been with us a long time. She's been a supporter for a long time, and she's really excellent. So she's under very serious. We'll probably make a decision next week. We have a lot of people that want the job, and there are a lot of really great people, but we'll be talking about that next week sometime.
And did you see Oprah Winfrey's comments today?
I didn't. What did she say?
She was campaigning in Georgia at the same time that Vice President Pence was.
At the same time as...
At the same time Vice President Pence was encouraging people to vote and...
Well, that's okay. I mean, look, I was on Oprah's last week of her show. Oprah liked me very much. I've always liked Oprah. You know, Oprah's good, but the woman that she's supporting is not qualified to be the governor of Georgia by any stretch of the imagination. And I'll be in Georgia the next few days, and we have a tremendous around Macon. We have a tremendous... crowd already. Nobody has a crowd like we have because people want to see a great governor of Georgia. And I think Brian's going to be a great governor of Georgia. I think he'll be a fantastic governor. He's totally qualified. She is not qualified to be the governor of Georgia. She's not qualified. And Georgia is a great state. It's a great, great state. Take a look at her past. Take a look at her history. Take a look at what she wants to do and what she has in mind for the state. That state will be in big, big trouble very quickly. And the people of Georgia don't want that. Question.
Just received an update on election integrity. Can you say for a fact that
I just met with the FBI, with Chris, and the Justice Department, and with Secretary Nielsen. And they've spent a lot of time and effort and some money on making sure that everything with respect to the election coming up in 5 days is going to be perfect and safe. There will be hopefully no meddling, no tampering, no nothing. And we spent a lot. Now, President Obama had the chance to do that in September before 16, but he chose not to do that because he thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. And while everybody agrees it didn't affect the vote at all, nevertheless, he could have done things that probably would have made it a little more obvious, a little clearer. But he was told by the FBI in September before the election in 16 about potential meddling or potential Russian meddling, and he did nothing about it. He didn't do that because he thought that Hillary Clinton would win. All right. One more. I think we're going to do very well in the election. I must tell you, if you look at the races, if you look at the Senate, which is very important, obviously, I'm leaving today. I'll be in Missouri, and I'll be touching down at a number of places over the next 5 days. But I think we're doing very well in the Senate, and I think we're doing very, very well in the House. The only problem is with the House is so many people. I'd like to stop for every one of them, but there's so many people. But I think we're doing very well in the House. I think people want to see strong borders. I think they want to see security. They want to see good health care. They want to see the things that we're providing. They don't want to have their taxes increased. We're decreasing their taxes. We just announced yesterday, you probably heard, Kevin Brady put it out, a reduction of tax. We're going for a reduction of middle income tax.
All right. The president now wrapping up this press conference. We'll have reaction. Monica Crowley and Tammy Bruce standing by. Also, Project Veritas, brand new tape out. Wow, it's devastating. All coming up.
And even before you get to the caravan, just on a daily basis, people coming in. And it's a very bad thing for our country. It's sad in many ways, but it's a very bad thing for our country. And again, costs us billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. And I will therefore take every lawful action at my disposal to address this crisis. And that's what we're doing. The United States military, great people. My administration is finalizing a plan to end the rampant abuse of our asylum system. It's abused. To halt the dangerous influx and to establish control over America's sovereign borders. Got borders. And once that control is set and standardized and made very strong, including the building of the wall, which we've already started, $1.6 billion spent last year, $1.6 billion this year. We have another $1.6 that will be coming, but we want to build it at one time. All it does is turn people in a different direction if you don't. We want to build it at one time. Those who choose to break our laws and enter illegally will no longer be able to use meritless claims to gain automatic admission into our country. We will hold them for a long time if necessary. The only long-term solution to the crisis and the only way to ensure the endurance of our nation as a sovereign country is for Congress to overcome open borders obstruction. That's exactly what it is. It's open borders obstruction. No votes. You can come up with the greatest border plan, the greatest immigration plan. You won't get one vote from a Democrat. They have terrible policy. In many cases, they're terrible politicians. But the one thing I give them great credit for, they vote as a block. They stick together. And we will end catch and release. We're not releasing any longer.
All right. The president now doing about a 45-minute address from the Oval Office talking about immigration, about how we cannot and will not be accepting the caravan people coming here, the illegitimate claims of asylum for America, Mexico's role in all of this. And going forward, what it means in terms of expediting those people that enter the country illegally, that they can't spend 3.5 years trying a case to get them out of the United States, and that we're the only country that does this. If you think about it, too, if we had the border wall completed, and he's talked about $3.5 billion worth of spending now at the wall, but we need about $22 billion more. And how the laws have been really, really wrong for a long time. There's been this unwillingness on the part of the Democrats, even when the president offered a deal on so-called Dreamers. That, too, was just ignored. Democratic strategy leading into this election in 5 days is very clear, and that is don't talk about immigration. Or in the desperate case of Claire McCaskill, I think I'm beginning to support the president's idea for a wall, which would be an election year conversion so that she herself could get reelected and then go right back to being the liberal she's always been, the Schumer liberal she's always been. Monica Crowley was patiently listening with us as it relates to the president and his address from the White House today. She's a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. Interesting, the Center for American Progress is telling Democrats, don't talk about immigration. It's a bad, just change the topic. That's their words, not mine.
Yeah, Sean, hi. Yeah, because they're looking at the poll numbers, too, on this issue. And what I think is finally dawning on them is that of the many reasons why Donald Trump was elected president in 2016, and there were many reasons, but perhaps the biggest was his stand on illegal immigration, enforcing existing laws, building the border wall, ending catch and release, ending the visa lottery program, and doing what he has pledged to do. And now that we see these caravans with, you know, thousands of people getting ready to storm our southern border, he's actually putting his money where his mouth is. He's deploying the U.S. military and military equipment to the southern border. And everybody around the world, including those in this caravan, Sean, know that there's a new sheriff in town, and this president means what he says and says what he means.
You know, the interesting thing is people say this is false, this is phony, this is not real, that there's this talk of they're invading. Well, if you look at the video, and we showed a lot of it on Hannity, when they got to the Mexican border, we saw what they did to the fence down there. We saw that they didn't listen to the small contingent of Mexican police down there, and they rushed across the border. And for the president to say, well, they're 4 weeks out, I'll deal with it when it comes and when it happens, well, that would be irresponsible. And let me be very clear. I probably think 99%, maybe more, of the people in that caravan, I'll be very blunt, I think they're people that come from very poor countries that have little hope and opportunity in their own lives. And they look at America the way we should all look at America, as a land of opportunity and milk and honey and prosperity and, you know, a better life for themselves and their families. You know, one of the big problems that they have is we can't vouch for any one of those people that would like a better life. If you want to come to America, the first priority and requirement needs to be that you respect our laws, you respect our borders, you respect our sovereignty. And we just need to have the opportunity to vet you to make sure that you come here with good intentions for our country. You don't have a troubled background and that you have the means to be able to take care of yourself while you're here. There's a study that came out. I cited earlier in the program. It's $70,000 per illegal immigrant. When we look at the educational, health care costs, criminal justice costs associated with some, and it is a cost we can no longer bear. And if we had the wall, we wouldn't have to be worried about the caravan and God forbid anybody on either side getting hurt, because I don't want that either.
Yeah, and you know, this is an issue that crosses party lines, which of course frustrates the far left, because they want to paint anybody who opposes the president's positions on these issues, Sean, as racists and bigots somehow. Actually, the president's stand on this issue, as you just pointed out, Democrat Claire McCaskill out of Missouri, who's in the fight of her life, is probably going to lose next Tuesday. She's trying to outwardly adopt the president's position on this because she knows, they all know, that this issue doesn't just motivate Republicans or conservatives. It motivates independents, it motivates a lot of Democrats, and it motivates a lot of minority groups like blacks and Latinos, and frankly women, because they have been losing out in terms of job opportunities and so on because of the shadow economy that's been created over many decades by the illegal immigrant problem. When Trump was running in 2015, 2016, he promised to get control of a long, out-of-control, illegal immigration nightmare. And that position was able to allow him to create this brand new voting constituency. It accelerated the realignment that we're still seeing. And frankly, Sean, I don't think the realignment is done yet. I think we're going to see a realignment on Tuesday that is continuing. It's Trump-led, but it's bigger than Donald Trump. And this one issue of illegal immigration, sovereignty, rule of law, respect for the American taxpayer, respect for the American worker, that issue crosses party lines, and it's something that I think is redefining our politics and will well into the future, because finally we've got a president who puts his money where his mouth is and is willing to put the military on the border and enforce existing laws.
I don't think any of this is complicated, and I think the president was very articulate, and I think that putting aside every other issue, I think it's a winning issue politically because the people believe in American sovereignty, the rule of law, border security. And we're not saying we don't want people to come. I like the idea of a border wall to protect both sides, and also one with a door where people, we can expedite the process for people to come in. And I think people need to prove the things that we're talking about, that they come with good intentions and they have the ability to sustain themselves. All right, you were more optimistic than me in terms of the elections, and I just want to run through really quickly. So in Florida, what do you see happening with Scott and DeSantis?
Well, I think, look, the governor's race, you mean DeSantis and Gillum?
Sean, yeah, we're going to go through these quick. I'm sorry, DeSantis and Gillum. Well, I was really talking about Rick Scott and his race against Nelson and
Bill Nelson. Yeah, you know, I think that might be a split race. I think that Rick Scott may win the Senate seat, but DeSantis might lose. I hope that's not the case. Again, this gets to turnout. We need every Republican, every independent, every disaffected Democrat to come out in Florida. It is a swing state going into 2020. It's critically important that we hold the governorship. Frankly, many governorships across the country, we need to win, because that will have a huge effect on how these states move forward going into 2020.
How do you think? Well, I think it's pick 'em, both in the governor's race, although this new tape is devastating of Gillum, and they ended up firing as a result of Project Veritas. We'll talk to James O'Keefe at the bottom of the half hour, but devastating towards him. Do you agree with me? Ted Cruz wins Texas, probably by a pretty comfortable margin.
Yes, handily. Texas is still red.
And let's go to Tennessee. Marsha Blackburn has run a great campaign. Bredesen exposed also by Project Veritas. You know, his campaign thinking the people of Tennessee are ignorant and they're just saying things to get elected, and including he's saying when he said he'd vote for Judge Kavanaugh. So who wins that race?
Yes, I think Marsha Blackburn, who is phenomenal, I think she wins that race. I think Tennessee is still a center-right state. And it's interesting, Sean, because Bredesen has been exposed as a liberal, as so many of these.
All right, but I got to keep going. And what about Missouri? Claire McCaskill, does she lose to Josh
Hawley?
She goes down. What about Arizona? Kristen Sinema, finally a poll today. I've been waiting for this. The woman that supports Americans joining the Taliban after 9/11, she is down 7 now to Martha McSally.
McSally will win. Arizona, yes, is a changing state, but it's still center-right.
And Dean Heller holds Nevada, tough state, but he's up.
Tough race, very narrowly he wins.
Now that the Libertarian has bailed in Montana, I do believe it was a 3-point race before that, and the Libertarian now supporting the Republican, what's his name, Rosendale, against John Tester, pretty much a Schumer Democrat. Does John Tester lose?
Yes.
Wow, you're making that prediction.
Yes.
All right, what about Indiana? Indiana, Joe Donnelly made some really incendiary comments in the debate last week. Oh, I have people of this background and this background, but they actually do a good job.
But I'm like, they do a good job. Can you imagine
if they do a good job,
said this, Sean?
Well, you got a Libertarian, though, running in Indiana who's still in the race and, you know, drawing 4 points away from Braun, who's a great candidate.
Yeah, look, Indiana is a red state, so if I were to guess, I think Braun wins.
Okay, now let's stay in West Virginia. Manchin, does he hold?
Well, you know, like Bredesen, they try to position themselves as moderate, Sean. Manchin is actually the one Democrat I could actually get with, because he actually is an independent thinker. That race has gotten extremely tight. I think that's a toss-up.
What about the House? conventional wisdom, Republicans hold the Senate, split decision, pick up seats, as you're saying, and lose the House. Nancy Pelosi wins. What do you say to that?
I have never bought into the conventional wisdom, Sean. I have said on your program on TV and here for a while now that I think the Republicans retain the House narrowly, but it does depend on turnout. So we need every Republican, independent, and disaffected Democrat to come out between now and Tuesday and vote for their Republican in their district and in their state.
I would say we're down in the House, but, you know, I'm just looking at the numbers, but in the age of Trump, the numbers don't mean what they used to. So I do have that caveat. All right, Monica Crowley, thank you. James O'Keefe, a blockbuster tape where one of the top aides of Andrew Gillum, oh, Florida's a cracker state. Holy moly. And worse. All right, as we wrap things up. All right, Project Veritas, pretty amazing tape. And beyond shocking, I mean, you have Andrew Gillum now has been exposed for a lot of different things, and Project Veritas has now released this new video. It is literally a bombshell, and you literally have on tape a guy who just got fired earlier today, and the things that are said, they finally cut ties with this guy, Omar Smith, who was one of the staffers, and you know he's going on and on the tape how Florida is an effed up state. And how it's a cracker state, an eight blank state, and much more. And you also got to whip people up into a frenzy, poor people, middle class people, whip them up into a frenzy to get them to get out and vote for you. I'm like, holy, on tape. Now the guy got fired. And the one thing that stands out in the Gillum tape, which we're going to play at the bottom of this half hour, and we showed last night, we've got a new tape tonight. Well, let's just say it's Texas. Bozo. That's all I'll say. And same with Bredesen in Tennessee, McCaskill and Heitkamp and Sinema. Every Democrat Project Veritas has gone to and gone undercover, you all get the same thing. Democrats purposely lying about who they are, how they will govern, and literally mocking the people of their states and admitting on tape that they're just phonies and liars, and they think they know better than the people of the state, and they'll govern far, far left, but they'll never tell the people of their state what they really want to do. Because why? Liberalism ends justifies the means, and their views are superior to we, the little people. Anyway, we'll get to that when we come back. James O'Keefe is next. Project Veritas has been all over this election, starting with Phil Bredesen. Yeah, he thinks the people, or at least people that work for him, he thinks the people of Tennessee are ignorant. And then he got exposed. Well, yeah, we're only saying we're voting for Kavanaugh. ProjectVeritas.com exposed him. Then they went on to expose Claire McCaskill. Same thing with her is, yeah, we're just saying these things so we can get elected. We don't really believe them. Then the same thing in North Dakota with Heidi Heitkamp. And then the same thing with Kristen Sinema. By the way, the woman that says it's okay for Americans to join the Taliban after 9/11. Well, now I think the most explosive tape to date, and they've all been explosive, Project Veritas now focusing on the Florida gubernatorial candidate that the left seems to love, Andrew Gillum, showing what a stunning depths that he will go through to deceive the voters throughout the state of Florida. On top of that, you have staffers and aides discussing him willingly lying to the people of Florida, just like in Missouri and Arizona and North Dakota and Tennessee, same thing. And, you know, none of the programs that the people are hoping for would happen, but that's not for voters to know. Oh, okay. Is that how that works? You have to whip them up, the poor, the middle income. You have to whip them up into a frenzy in order to get them to vote. Then the video takes a really bad turn where it includes vicious, a hate-filled, racist comment from one of the top campaign staffers of Andrew Gillum, who we now know was fired today, that this is an effed-up state, talking about the state of Florida. It's a cracker state, talking about the state of Florida. Wonder how many early voters might have wanted to change their vote had they known this tape was available. Anyway, let's play it.
So, Omar, you're saying that the corporate tax should he's counting on court contempt to cover all of the programs that he wants to fund.
Correct.
But what if, I mean, what if you want to put all your eggs in one basket? What if that doesn't work out? What else would happen? How would he get money?
Yes.
So then none of the programs that, that you know, people are hoping for would happen?
Basically.
Well, do voters know that?
I know,
Do voters know that?
That's not for them to know.
Huh?
That's not for them to know.
Can.
Remember our saying?
I know exactly.
Modern day fairy tales start with once I am elected.
So, are you suggesting that that this is a, we should keep this a well kept secret?
Yes. Why would it be not?
Versus
like
the Tea Party of the Democrats.
It's the far right, Medicare for all, borderline socialism.
That's the blue wave.
No,
that's progressive.
The
progressive agenda.
Okay. So you have the extreme right wingers. Those are the Trump and the crazy Republicans. The progressives are the crazy Democrat. Your hipsters, your hippies.
Isn't that you? Isn't that the cool you?
The hippie.
I guess the hippie in me.
I think he's somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's...
Are you not a progressive? Isn't Gillum a progressive?
Gillum is a progressive.
So Gillum is part of the crazy crazies?
He's part of the crazy.
You have a governor, right? Good. You got a black attorney general. That's good.
Yeah.
Now, the goal is to switch out your legislatures. So now the governor can get
he can do
what
that.
He wants. The rules in Florida are up.
But tell me about it, man.
All right, this is a bad state.
Okay.
It's a cracker state.
Okay.
Okay, ask anybody outside of here. You go to Port St. Lucie, Orlando. Man, them crackers ain't gonna let us do that. No, you crazy? I lived in Tallahassee for 10 years. I've seen it. I went to a black college. Yeah. Even my father's wife, she like, oh, them crackers gonna take over FAMU. They ain't got no vision. They can't get it right. I hear that so much. I'm like, yeah, y'all motherfucking crazy.
Right.
Really?
You have your set target who believe your story. Everybody have, there's a campaign message for everybody.
So he's just fabricating stories for each crowd?
I wouldn't say he's fabricating stories, then he would be a liar.
So, what is he doing?
He's campaigning, he's politicking.
So, you're saying that different environments, wherever he speaks, he'll address a different audience?
Yeah, that's what a politician do.
Is that really being upfront, though? I mean, like, why doesn't he tell the people what he really believes?
But laws have to represent everyone.
So if we are sure that we get progressives everywhere, then we can get the agenda done?
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling me.
That makes more sense, right?
It makes more sense. But then now you alienate the conservative people.
That we're just going to
and that
the early voting started
is not good governance.
And we're hoping you'll go out and vote for
but Henry then Kevin maybe Trump. We don't do we have to let them know what the agenda is ahead of time?
You can't.
You can or cannot?
You cannot.
So you cannot let them know ahead of time what the agenda is. Because
no.
Then you would alienate them.
Then you alienate everybody. Then you get painted like how Gillum is being painted. No. You are a socialist. You are way out of left field. But that message resonated for someone.
All right, joining us now, he is the man himself, founder of Project Veritas, hated by Democrats around the country. Well, that didn't take long to get that firing.
No, Sean, that was pretty quick, and I think you're right. This is the most inflammatory, outrageous tape
And that's saying a lot, especially this strategy which they're revealing. You whip them up. He says you appeal to white guilt because that's what it is. This is one of Gillum's college activist associates, a guy named Omar Smith, 39-year-old guy who went to college with Gillum, works for Gillum now. Now, he did work for Gillum. He was fired a few hours ago. And he talks about that none of these things are actually going to happen, and the voters can't know that. It's all a, quote, fairy tale. He says, quote, modern-day fairy tales start with once I'm elected, unquote. So this is a real window into the soul of who these people are and their strategy to lie. I mean, it's much worse than lying. This is racist. It's outrageous. It's disgusting. And Gillum has said so by firing this guy now.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, but this is supposedly like one of his best friends from college, right?
That's what this guy has said. He said that he went to college with him at, I don't remember the name of the college, but it was in Florida there. And he says it in the tape that they went to school together. They were activists, part of SGA, the Student Government Association. They did a lot of stuff working together back in the day. So I think that's why Gillum probably didn't take very long to fire him. This guy talks about Gillum, says he's part of the crazy, crazy, crazy. That's a direct quote. That Gillum is a progressive, that in order to win, you know, he has to kind of pretend. But this is all about a fairy tale, Sean. This is what this man says. And I did confront him for comment yesterday. I did walk up to the campaign office in typical 60 Minutes style, and this man Omar basically said, "Please do not publish this video." So he was pretty shocked that we had caught him in these moments.
It's pretty unbelievable in terms of the consistency of, you know, if you look at Bredesen in Tennessee, McCaskill in Missouri, Sinema in Arizona, Heitkamp in North Dakota. I mean, the great phenomenon that is emerged in all of these videos is that they all have to lie to get elected, and they all are mocking the people of their state and basically making fun of them and just saying, yeah, we're just saying what we need to say to get moderates and Republicans to believe our lies. Then we'll get elected, and then we're going to govern as crazy, crazy, crazy left, as they said in the Gillum tape.
It seems to be a phenomenon in red states in particular, with Democrats who have to appeal to moderates, woo moderates, and then also play to the progressive base. But what's extraordinary about the video, and you guys have got to see this tape, because this is one of those things. I'm watching the comments, and people are saying, I can't believe you got them to talk. I can't believe you got them to say
it wasn't hard. That's the sad part. They were like bragging about it, happy.
It's amazing too, because the media, the New York Times is now reporting this, Sean. This is an article in the New York Times. There's an article in Politico. I think the media is upset that we got this story and they didn't. So it's also a media story as much as it is a story about the campaign. The media have not reported this until now.
Let me play the Democrats' lie montage. This is like the biggest lie from all of them all together. Let's play that.
It's an election year for her. She's being careful about pissing at people off. And what's funny is that she said basically, like, after the election, if and when she gets reelected, she's going to be super liberal.
There's a lot of very conservative people in Arizona, and so she can't alienate the conservative or moderate conservative voters by being super pro. She is pro-choice. She's very liberal. She's progressive.
Right.
But she doesn't, in this election, want to draw too much attention to being progressive.
She doesn't, like, openly go out and support groups like Moms Demand Action or just, like, other groups that are, like, related to that, because that could hurt, like, people, her, like, her ability to get elected.
I was so confused because I just can't believe that he would actually vote yes. Like, I
oh, have... he wouldn't. But he's saying he wouldn't. Politics, which I don't know if that makes it worse or better. No, it makes it better, but it's still.
But what's the, like, I don't understand what's to gain by signing yes.
Moderate Republicans.
It's one after another. I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing. All right, we don't have that much time left. What is the, is this now the end, or do we have more?
No, Sean, we have another one tonight, or later today, which I'm going to hopefully
I should have known.
Here embargoed. But this is sorry to do this all back to back, but we've been doing this for a year, and every day is a different state. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you the state. It's Texas, and it's a nuclear one. This is a big deal.
It wouldn't have anything to do with the with Beto, would it?
It has to do with the migrant caravan and Beto. It's a very big deal, and I'm very excited to release this story.
And so we're going to release it tonight on Hannity, too?
Yes. Yes, we are.
So Hannity at 9 o'clock. Is there more after Beto?
There is. Every day. But this one's a big one. This one's a significant one. And Sean, just really quick.
Well, I thought yesterday's was huge. If Gillum now wins in Florida, I just don't know what people are thinking. And now local news down there, as I understand it, is picking up the tape, too.
It is, because they fired the guy. And that's pretty significant how quickly it took them to he's a college friend, a college activist of Gillum. So we're looking for more pressure on local media. That's what really counts, is the local media.
Yeah, it does. Well, let me ask you this. Did you expect this going in?
What we do at Project Veritas is confirm suspicions. We suspect things, and we believe that there are, due to the nature of politics in these states, that there is a difference between how politicians project themselves and who they really are. We know that because that's what we do every day. We record interactions with people. We catch them, who they really are, what they pretend, the explanations. This Omar tape in Florida was outrageous. This was unbelievable. And I can't help but think, where is the media? Like, what? The media is so damning to the media, because they give these guys a platform and they don't challenge them. And we walk into the office and ask, this wasn't espionage. We just walked into the office and asked questions. As Omar proceeded to say, the state is effed up. It's a, quote, cracker state. It's a fairy tale. We're not going to do any of these things. I mean, this is not espionage, Sean. I just asked these guys questions. Some of the questions I asked them on the curb outside the office. So
unbelievable.
I am shocked by the media, and the media now, the blue check marks on Twitter are tweeting at me, New York Times people tweeting at me now. I think they're really upset and seething that we've gotten these stories and they haven't.
Well, they don't do their job. They never have. Journalism is dead, although new journalism is emerging and alive and healthy and vibrant and innovative. And I hope the people in all these states pay attention to these tapes. They're blockbuster. All right, we will exclusively run the ProjectVeritas.com tape tonight. Beto O'Rourke, there's the headline, and has to do with the caravan. I bet you they're sweating, wondering what you have on them, thinking, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But anyway, James O'Keefe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. All right, we're going to go over all the important races. We're going to pull up the Hannity big board map. We're bringing it out from last election season. Bill Hemmer's going to go over everything with us. The great one, Mark Levin, Steve Ducey, Dan Bongino. Also, we have candidate Matt Rosendale. He can now win in Montana. Great candidate now that the Libertarian bailed out. Mike Braun, another candidate that could win if people don't vote Libertarian in Indiana. They'll join us, and much, much more. The best election coverage, I promise, on TV. We'll cover all the president's comments on immigration and so much more. 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News. Hope you'll join us. See you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow with only 4 days to go. Are you ready?